This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource of pilots and aircraft owners.
Hello, everyone. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting from AirVenture 2012. I'm with Ian Seeger, who is editor-publisher of the UK Fire magazine, among many. And Ian, not too unusual to see a UK editor here at Oshkosh, but it is unusual for one to have flown in a small aircraft from the UK, which you did, in a 182, I think. Tell us a little bit about that trip, why you decided to do this year, what was involved.
Well, about 7 or 8 months ago, we were sitting around and thinking it might be a good idea. It's just flying to America is one of those things that many pilots want to do one day, and Oshkosh seemed like a great excuse to do it. So we 7 months ago, we said, hey, let's fly to Oshkosh, and then without really thinking about it, we had to start planning, and all of a sudden, we got to the departure day and had to take off. That was it, really.
What was involved as far as equipping the airplane and equipping yourselves? That's a fairly long trip. It's if you go the Blue Spruce, which I assume you did, you don't have tremendous overwater legs, but you've got enough. So how did you prepare and equip for that?
Well, there was actually three airplanes. There was a Baron, a TB-20, and a 182. And the Baron and TB-20 were okay doing it as stock because they've got great range. And we in the 182, there's flint tanks in the tips, which gives us more than enough fuel. So we've got just over 8 hours fuel. We all wore dry suits. We took loads of survival kit. Big dinghy in the back, and that was really it. Some of the hardest thing really early on was just getting the insurance cover for the trip, and that proved one of the challenges. So the insurance company wanted us to. They started off by saying you need to have done the flight 3,000 times or something before, and then we basically just had to get briefed by various people, and it was fine after that.
And did you say you did do it on stock fuel, or did you add a ferry tank?
I had flint tip tanks in the 182. But the TB-20 and the Baron were stock.
And tell me about the route that you flew.
We first of all flew up to Wick in the north of the UK in Scotland, and then we set off from there to Reykjavik in Iceland, and from Reykjavik, because we didn't have too much of a headwind, we did one long leg to Sondrestrom Fjord on the west coast of Greenland, fueled up there, and then took off and flew on to Iqaluit, to Frobisher, and overnighted there, and then from there we made our way down through Arctic Canada, eventually to a place called North Bay, and we cleared customs into the US at St. Clair County, I believe it was called, and then on to Cincinnati.
And how long are those legs, those overwater legs, I guess starting from the north of UK over to, you said Iceland?
Reykjavik, yeah. Reykjavik. The longest overwater leg is actually from Wick to Reykjavik. And I think from memory that's about 742 nautical miles, something like that. It took us just under 6 hours in total, that one, with the wind. So it's a fair chunk of water.
And what kind of training did you have to do to prepare for this? Just handling the suits and anything else?
Yeah, we getting in and out of the suits is one of the hardest parts. Wearing it, just putting, you kind of, they're really uncomfortable to start with, to be honest, but you kind of get used to it after a while. And other than that, we didn't really do much training. We kind of obviously looked and reviewed all the approaches on the way, and we decided early on that the trip was for fun. So if the weather was at all marginal, we'd just hole up in a hotel somewhere and wait till it was better. There was no commercial pressure. It was just a fun trip.
And how was the weather?
The weather was pretty much fantastic all the way. A little few mornings with a bit of fog, a little bit around Grand Riviere in Canada, which made us change our route slightly. But apart from that, it was great. No problem at all with the weather.
Now, I think you said you had the fuel in Greenland. What kind of fuel is available there, and how much does it cost?
In Greenland, I can't remember exactly how much it cost, but it was quite easy to get 100 LL from a truck. And in Iqaluit, you have to buy it by the drum, so 205-litre drum or 55-gallon drum, which costs about, I think from memory, $316 Canadian dollars, which was quite good. We ended up at a place called Kuujjuaq, where they, again, you had to buy it by the drum, and they had no pumps, so you have to bring your own pump, which we didn't have and didn't know about, but luckily we had enough fuel to not need it there, and that was 740 US a drum there, so we didn't buy any. And then we went on to Schaeferville, and so one of the important considerations is making sure that in Canada they've got the fuel and they've got a way of dispensing it in the remote parts of Canada.
Now, were the other three aircraft, I assume you're all on separate flight plans, but together?
No, we were on separate flight plans, and the Baron was obviously the quickest. The TB20 was quicker than the 182, so we were pretty much always last there, but even though we took off first. So we kind of chatted to each other about the conditions en route on a discrete frequency. But we didn't fly in formation or anything. So we helped each other out a bit.
And how much total flying for the first trip into the U.S.?
In the 182, we did 37 hours, something like 4,300 and something nautical miles.
Over how many days?
It took us 4.5 days. We went from Wick in Scotland, and we landed at I-69, Clermont County. It was the end of our trip before we came to Oshkosh.
Knowing what you know now, having done the trip, if you do it again, what would you do differently, or what would you change?
I would think about spending the money to put an autopilot in my airplane.
Oh, you have no autopilot?
I have no autopilot, no. So an autopilot would be a really good thing, and then that would be about the only thing I'd change. I'd probably avoid Kuzurak, to be honest. But apart from that, autopilot would be the main thing.
You think you will do it again?
I don't know. I may do, yeah. Maybe I'll come over to Sun and Fun or something. I don't know. I'm not going to in a rush to do it again, because it's not the cheapest way of getting to Oshkosh ever.
That's for sure. Let's segue into just a little bit of talk about flying activity in the UK. What are some of the highlights of what's going on over there that we might not know about here, some of the trends?
Well, I guess the biggest thing that would be appropriate information for the US is we've got an increasing amount of UL91 fuel. So Total supply UL91 fuel to an awful lot of places in the UK now, an increasing number of places. And it works out maybe 15, 20 pence a litre cheaper. So what's that? Only probably $1.50 a gallon cheaper or something like that. So there are the fuel availability is one thing that's a lot cheaper. Regulation, we're all under the burden of European EASA regulation, which is just ridiculous, along with the maintenance issues that we have. Apart from that, we're pretty good. I mean, having experienced on the way over your EAPIS system and the search and the check for radioactivity and the dogs in the airplane and everything else we got, that was pretty interesting. And filling out the EAPIS form was perhaps one of the hardest things about the whole trip. And in the UK, we tend not to have a great deal of issue with customs. So I'll fly back to a private strip from France, say, and just give customs 4 hours notice with a very simple form. And most of the time, in fact, I can't remember the last time they actually turned up to check anything, to be honest with you. So that was quite interesting.
How about flight activity in the UK? We've got a pretty established flat to downward trend in the US. So what does it look like over there?
I'd say it's pretty similar. I mean, I bought the magazine 18 years ago, and the central core of the market 18 years ago was effectively people renting a 172 or a PA-28 for a couple of hours from a flying club or flying school every weekend. And now the market's really polarized. So you've got people who've gone bought their own aircraft and gone out and bought things like Cirruses and Matrixes, Meridians and upwards, and then people who've gone and bought LSAs or building their own experimental aircraft or sharing an aircraft in a group of anything from 5 to 20. And that real central core of the self-fly hire rental market is just almost always on the verge of disappearing, really. So it's polarized quite a lot.
And how about training activity?
Training activity is pretty buoyant in the professional market. So there are an awful lot of people who train to become professional pilots. We run some small events in the UK and elsewhere in Europe, and they are extremely well attended. There's a lot of people who want to become professional pilots. Sadly, many of those people don't seem to have a huge interest in general aviation, and it's just a hoop they have to jump through to get to the right-hand seat of an airliner. But the private, or what we'd call PPL training, is on a downward slope at the moment, I would say, sadly.
You think it'll turn around?
I do think it'll turn around, but I think it'll take some external factor of some kind to turn it around, whether it'll be electric aircraft or something. I don't know what it'll be, but there needs to be something. The problem is the value proposition at the moment is not very good. You can spend, you know, maybe $12,000, $13,000, $14,000 to learn to fly in a 1972 aeroplane with half of the stuff that's US unserviceable, and it's not a great value proposition. I think that's really where where the problems begin.
Yeah, very similar to the U.S. Well, Ian, thanks for the explanation of the flight. Sounds like an interesting time. I'd love to go back with you, but I got to stay here in the U.S. and work. Thanks again.
That's a pleasure. Thanks very much.
We've been speaking with Ian Seeger of the UK Fire Magazine. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting for AvWeb and Aviation Consumer from AirVenture 2012 in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Thanks for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine. For more information on Aviation Consumer, log on to www.aviationconsumer.com.